Did you know that the CIA has used prostitutes to drug their Johns to test how susceptible they are to being brainwashed? Did you know that the CIA brought over ex-Nazi generals to learn how they had been able to control so many people's minds during the Holocaust? Did you know that only a few decades ago, we were putting people to sleep for up to 70 days with no sensory exposure to try and return them to a childlike state in order to control their brains?
All this and more on today's episode of My Friend Has Never Listened to a Podcast, reviewing Brainwashed by the CBC. Welcome to My Friend Has Never Listened to a Podcast.
I'm Ollie, and I'm a business psychologist.
And I'm James, and I'm a cultural transformation specialist. And together, we're your hosts of My Friend Has Never Listened to a Podcast.
This week, James, we were reviewing The Fabulous Brainwashed by CBC.
We were, Oles, and it was such a journey. It was such a ride.
This podcast was produced by our friend Chris Oak, who also brought us Hunting Warhead, which was one of our favourite podcasts. And Brainwashed did not disappoint. So this is an invitation to any of our listeners who have not yet had chance to check out the new podcast Brainwashed to go away and listen, as there will be spoilers in mine and James's review.
Hey Ollie, do you reckon you could give our listeners a bit of an overview about what Brainwashed is all about?
This podcast goes into detail of some of the treatment of the patients at the Allen Hospital in Canada, where a psychiatrist by the name of Dr. Ewan Cameron was using very dubious techniques to try and help his patients. He had patients who were suffering from postmortem depression, severe nerve pain, and he was trialing experiments which involved giving patients drugs such as LSD and also depriving them of any sensory experiences for up to 70 days at a time. Mm. The reason that they were doing this was to try and return their brain back to a childlike state in the hope that they would forget the trauma that Dr. Cameron believed had induced their current medical state. Unfortunately, James, these treatments ended with some pretty catastrophic outcomes for these poor patients.
Yeah, I love how you called it dubious, these dubious techniques. I was like, straight up wrong. Straight up cracked. You've got this doctor who was trialing these extremely dangerous strategies to try and influence people's brains to be different. And what seemed really absent from the equation was the negative repercussions or side effects of these treatments on these people. It was quite hard to listen to at times because one of the big themes in this podcast is around the impact that these treatments had on the family members of the patients that actually entered that clinic. And they entered this clinic over a number of years, all coming out with extreme challenges post-treatment. And got me a bit frustrated at times because it all seemed as though the doctor's excuse and people around him's excuses were in the name of science. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. It kind of had me wondering whether did this doctor genuinely believe that what he was doing was helping these people, or was there an ulterior motive to it? Because as I mentioned, Ollie, one of the themes was how it impacted the family. You hear from so many different family members in this podcast about how their dad that they knew at 8 years old had entered into this clinic and come out a few months later a different person, someone who used to play catch with their son who would never do that again post-treatment. So, you know, these massive ripple effects that happened off the back of these treatments for many different family members throughout this time, you definitely felt for a lot of these people because you're hearing now from elderly children of the people that were patients back then who have had a life fraught with trauma, really, right?
Worse symptoms than they had before they went into the hospital in many cases. And not just traumatic for them when their loved ones came out, even going to see them in hospital. Imagine going to see your parents who've been asleep for 70 days and is wearing a nappy in bed because they've been reduced to a baby-like state. It would be horrific. Just returning to your point originally about, was Dr. Cameron doing this in the name of science and did he have good intentions? I would have to err on the side of he did. I only say that because I really enjoyed the interview with his son, who talked about how brilliant his dad was and how there may have been times when he strived so hard to push the boundaries of science that he went too far. I still think somebody can have good intentions even if they do go too far.
Now, this is the son that destroyed some of the records so that his dad's reputation wouldn't be fully tarnished. Is that correct?
Allegedly.
Yeah, so you do hear in this podcast from all sides. So you do hear from the son of the doctor, and you hear from sons and daughters of the patients who were under his care. It is a very robust podcast in that respect, that you get all angles and you get to see it from all different people's perspectives.
And Michelle Shepherd did a fantastic job of conducting so many interviews with so many different people, from, as you say, the family members to attorneys who were involved in the legal fight to sue the hospital for the treatment of their parents, and ex-CIA people, because as you go through the podcast, we learn that the CIA was so interested in the work that Dr. Cameron was carrying out that they thought this guy might be onto something and might be able to help us with our national security.
It does bring up this other theme about how the CIA did partner with Dr. Cameron. And
gave him grants, James.
This is where that idea that I said before, Ollie, of whether he was doing it with the right intentions, if it was money driven and it was something that the CIA were commissioning him to do, I'm trying to figure out how they either sold it to him or how he chose to ignore certain parts of this deal. Because what came off the back of it was a project, a secret, top secret project called MK Ultra. Now, some of our listeners might be familiar with that. Ollie, were you familiar with it before you listened to the podcast?
No,
neither was I. I'd never heard of it. And yet, back in the day, MK Ultra was doing some extremely questionable things in terms of advancing national security. Talk to me, Ollie. Run our listeners through a few of the things that MK Ultra tried as their way of trying to advance national security.
One of the techniques that I found most intriguing was this idea that they were working alongside prostitutes and getting them to bring their Johns, as they referred to them in the podcast, back to a house which was essentially fitted out with surveillance equipment so that they could observe what occurred in the house. And the role of the prostitute was to give the John LSD without them realizing, so slipping it into a drink, and then observing how susceptible they were to suggestions. Now, what annoys me about this, James, is as to carry out any kind of psychological clinical research today, there is so much red tape that's in place to prevent any potential participant being harmed in any way, shape or form, that they actually abandon studies which I think have a really good ethical grounding, such as one of the studies that was abandoned a few years ago was the treatment of people suffering from moderate to severe depression. And they were testing three variable groups. One group was given the antidepressant, one group was given exercise a day and a placebo, and one group was given nothing. And which group, James, do you think showed the biggest improvement after a couple of weeks?
I'm going to put it out there that it was the one that had something to do with exercise.
It was, James, but check out the reason why they had to abandon the study. They abandoned the study. They didn't want the research results to be published because
it would screw up pharmaceuticals.
Well, yes, essentially that's why, but it was seen to be unfair to the participants who were in either the control group or who were given the antidepressant, because it was now unethical for them not to have been exposed to the most successful treatment. How crazy is that?
That's mental. I'm really glad in regards to where we've come with ethics and values around the testing, because I think if you look at the likes of what Dr. Cameron was doing, we've come leaps and bounds from back then in terms of what we now allow and what we don't allow.
To be fair, James, in America, they're still separating children from their parents and locking them in cages, so I don't think we've come that far.
No, but in terms of the space of psychology and like what happens above board in terms of what's allowed, what's not allowed, what's ethical, what's not ethical, definitely stuff still happening below ground and under the radar for sure. But I do think we've come, in terms of what we're willing to acknowledge, we've come a long way. Sometimes I do wonder, though, whether we use that as an excuse. And if Big Pharma were the ones that were going to lose money off the back of antidepressants no longer being necessary, because the stats in America especially around how many people are on antidepressants is phenomenal. It is absolutely mind-boggling how many people are on some form of antidepressant. That's what scares me, is that who's paying for these tests? Who's paying for them to no longer be done? Like, who benefits off the back of them? Because by the sounds of it, if more people did exercise and that could contribute to better mental health, that seems like a free health program. That seems like something that most people could access.
I know in the UK, they want doctors now to prescribe exercise before pills. So actively saying to people, change your diet, exercise, do what you can do for yourself before you start on the scripts. But for the purpose of these experiments, James, I'm interested to find out your perspective on why do you think a government would be interested in mind control? Why do they want to brainwash people in the first place?
Because it just would make life easier for them. Like if the government could control people's minds, that would be a huge solution to many of the problems that are out there. Oh, we've got this radical group that's saying that we should stop plastic from being used. Oh, let's just change their minds. We've got this group over here talking about Black Lives Matters. Oh, can't be dealing with that stuff. So let's just change their minds. Like, I can see that in terms of ease, governments might see this as being something that they could utilize when it came to people having opinions that were different to theirs.
God, that's so depressing, James.
Yeah, but
I was thinking more along the lines of they might use it to prevent people becoming addicted to drugs, or they might use it for some good. I can understand why marketeers, people who are trying to sell you stuff, would want to control your mind, such as with subliminal advertising, because they make money from it. But for a government to be interested in talking to ex-Nazi generals, I mean, what are you hoping to do? Replicate the Holocaust?
Well, in case our listeners haven't met my co-host, Ollie, the eternal optimist, who genuinely is sitting there hoping maybe they were going to use it for good. I highly doubt it.
God, how depressing.
We can always hope. You can always hope, Ols. Literally, this MK Ultra stuff in the podcast is stuff that sounds like a conspiracy theory. Genuinely, the way that they talk about it and the things that they were doing, it sounds like some sort of conspiracy theory that has actually been proven to be real. Now, in terms of how it was proven to be real, I don't know if any of our listeners read The Search for the Manchurian Candidate. John Marks, the author of The Search for the Manchurian Candidate, made it his mission to understand everything about what MK Ultra did and the impact that they actually had on not only America, but this bleeds over into Canada as well. And on the people that this project intercepted, the impact that this kind of stuff had on them. I have to give him massive credit because the extent that he went to bring this to life was phenomenal. He was scaling through records that had been blanked out, finding doctors' names and could see the first and the last letter of them, and then going through records upon records trying to figure out, oh, a 7-letter word for a doctor who lives in this particular area that starts with an M and ends with an N. That was his mission, to try and figure out all the blank spots that...
And work out how long words were based on the typewriter length of the letters to work out which letters they could be. I can't think of a more frustrating job.
And they referred to it as something like a forensic crossword, because he was pretty much trying to take a document that had been redacted and blanked out and bring it back to life in order to really understand what had happened and what the secret part of the CIA had been up to. It was, in fact, John Marks who made the correlation between MKUltra, the CIA's project, and a sub-project, which was sub-project 68, where he found out that a doctor in Canada was receiving funding from this project. And this is where the connection came between MKUltra and what Dr. Cameron was doing in Canada. And this is where it all starts to get a little bit weird. It starts to get a little bit crazy. I think one of the big reasons why it did seem like a bit of a conspiracy theory for so long is because although there was all this evidence of communist brainwashing and mind control experiments, it did seem as though the government had tried to cover this up. So when MKUltra had finished and all of these records had been blanked out and redacted, it did seem like there was some sort of a government cover-up. Would you agree, Ollie?
I don't know if it was a government cover-up. I just don't think the government want to tell us very much about what they're doing anyway. So I don't think they necessarily have to be actively covering up. I just don't want to sound like too much of a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Well, and this is the whole point of one of the episodes, is to bring to life how, although it sounds like a conspiracy theory, it was actually happening. And this then led to patients of the Allen Memorial finding out that they had been victims and test subjects for the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where things really started to sort of make a move. And again, we have that link back to that theme around how families are impacted by events like this and the ripple effect.
Trauma, mental illness.
Yeah. But
mistreatment.
How long lasting the impact can be. Like, these are people who decades later are now understanding what, and some of these patients were now in their 80s and 90s. Their children were in their 60s and 70s, coming to understand that their parents and the reason why they had such poorly lives had been because the government had been running experiments on them, essentially. Mm-hmm.
But then I always think money is not going to make that better, you know. I know a lot of them want an apology and they say an apology would be enough. However, money always seems to exchange hands in these lawsuits.
Mm. Yep. And you hear through this how much money was actually exchanged.
I can't remember how much moved hands.
In the first instance, some patients from the Allen Memorial actually sued the CIA. And the CIA, before it went to court, offered them in the ballpark of $70,000 to $90,000 each. And they paid out about close to $1 million Canadian. I think there were 9 people that took them to court, and each of them received around $90,000. So, yeah.
I mean, what's that going to do for you?
I don't know. I think that might have been a while back, so it might have been worth a little bit more than $90,000 is now. But I don't know, maybe it's that I think a lot of them, from the sounds of it, just wanted that admission of guilt, the admission that they'd done something wrong.
Yeah, I think a sorry. I think an apology is worth more than any amount of money that somebody can pay you, particularly if you're not now incurring costs. I think if you are now employing a full-time nurse to care for your parent who is completely incapacitated, fair enough, maybe there should be some compensation.
Mm.
However, compensation after the fact, I always think is an interesting argument, because how do you put value on someone's suffering or on their life and say, here, this will make it better?
And when the court awards $90,000, I don't think that that's what suffering is worth. I think it's worth a lot more. But how do you walk away happy with that? And I don't think many of them did, to be honest. I think that settlement happened and the CIA and the American government never apologized. They actually never admitted to doing anything wrong. And to this day, I think the way they talk about those payments is that if it ever came back to someone saying, oh, well, you paid out all that money, that must mean that you're taking responsibility and you're culpable, they have the right to turn around and say, no, we were just trying to shut up this annoying pest that wouldn't leave us alone. So we gave them money to get rid of them. So it's a scary downward slope, I suppose, when you're looking at trying to compensate in that space.
Yeah. But I think Brainwashed is another great example of how CBC go into a realm that a lot of journalists and investigators haven't made podcasts about, not that I've come across. And I just think it's such an interesting area that we need to do more research on, in terms of what have we done in the past that we now consider unethical and barbaric, and what are we doing today that in 20, 30, 40 years people will look back on and say, I can't believe they were doing that in 2020. I can think of a few off the top of my head.
Well, one for me, Oz, is chemotherapy. I genuinely think that in 20, 30 years' time, we're going to look back and wonder why people used to submit themselves to things like chemotherapy. I think that just seems like the most barbaric approach to trying to get rid of something inside you by killing all of your other cells.
However, we should point out that neither James or I are doctors, so please do not take our advice as gospel.
No, but this is just our opinion, right? Like, something that we think we might, I hypothesize that we all look back on and think of as being extremely barbaric. What about you, Oz? What are you?
I can remember being in the Colosseum in Rome a couple of years ago and the tour guide describing how sometimes they would set two wild animals against one another. So, for example, an elephant and a lion. Mm. And the crowd would be going wild as they were fighting. And sometimes the fight would go on for hours and the animals would lose interest and just start wandering away from each other. And in order to then get the gladiator fight started, they would say to the slaves or the gladiators who were going to have to fight, if one of you goes out and slays one of the animals, we will give you a quick death. So death is inevitable for you anyway. It's just, will you die during a battle and it will be painful and messy? Or if you go and try and kill that lion or tiger, we will then just put a knife in your chest. And you can imagine all of the tourists, we're all horrified and gasping and saying, that's so horrific.
Mm.
And he's saying, you know that in 100 years, people will look back on our society and look at racism and will be horrified at how we have treated people. And he went further and said, and then further along the line, they will probably look back and look at how we treated animals and how we ate animals and bred animals and raised animals and slaughtered animals and say, what a barbaric bunch.
Was your tour guide a vegan?
No.
I totally agree. I think this is an example of looking back through the lens of, what do they call it? Hindsight. Mm-hmm. Like we have the ability to look back and be like, oh, tut, tut, tut. How dare you? And that seems so disgusting. And I can't believe that you would do stuff like that. But we weren't back there. So I don't know if we can operate off the exact same frames that they were operating off back then.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever condone unethical things, but...
What's an unethical thing, James?
Yeah, exactly. thank you. Should I call you Kant today? Or who would you like, which philosopher would you like to be? But it's one of those things that I just hope that they were doing whatever they were doing with good intentions. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
I hope that they weren't doing it for the wrong reasons. One of the other things I wanted to touch on about MK Ultra and this podcast, Ollie Brainwashed, is that you may think that, okay, well, all this stuff was done back in the 1960s and that's when that MK Ultra finished and that would be the end of it. But here's where you've got to look at the ripple effect of what experiments like this can actually do to society as we know it. And you fast forward to the early 2000s where people had found this research and figured out that it was the perfect way to torture people and mm-hmm. became, over the last 40, 50 years, one of the main, most horrific ways in which people were tortured for information.
James Mitchell and Bruce Jessen are the two psychologists who were paid more than $80 million by the CIA to come up with an interrogation program for high-profile war on terror captives. This was the first time Mitchell and Jessen were forced to testify about the methods they devised, the enhanced interrogation techniques, the EITs, waterboarding, keeping people awake for days on end, shackling, confinement boxes, extreme temperatures, sounds, and pain. They were experiments, really, on how to make people do what you want them to do, make them talk. You could almost think of it as a form of mind control, but most just call it for what it is, torture.
And up until 9/11, we look at the fact that these torture techniques have now been transformed from research experiments into torture techniques.
And interrogation techniques.
Interrogation and torture techniques being handed around to all different parts of the world. And one of the shocking things that they explored in the podcast was how with the 9/11 terrorists, they'd actually used some of these techniques on them in Guantanamo Bay as a way of trying to extract information from them.
And also just to point out that Dr. Cameron was using ECT on his patients, so electroconvulsive therapy. That's still used today, James. That's not been phased out. We still electrocute people's brains to try and, you know, shake up those neurological pathways and help people.
Do we do it 4 times a day, though, for 70 days straight?
I would say no.
Because that's what he was doing.
Yeah, he was frying their brains.
So that you've got this great angle to the podcast as well, which looks at how these experiments, like so many other experiments that you would have heard of before, being conducted for the right reasons, all have this underbelly to them that when in the wrong hands, and like with anything that we've talked about in many of our podcasts, like we did when speaking about sleepwalkers and AI and how all of that can be used in negative or unhelpful ways, all of Dr. Cameron's experiments have now gone on to become some of the most horrific interrogation and torture techniques seen in the modern world over the last 50, 60 years.
Maybe we should recall our podcast, the Existential Questions
Crisis
Podcast, James, because we seem to get into some pretty deep topics when we're talking about other people's podcasts.
At least what I hope is that the CBC recognize that this is the kind of conversations that they're starting. And I think they're good conversations to be having. And if more people were having conversations like this around the world, I just hope that could see the world becoming a better place.
And you say I'm the eternal optimist, James.
There's my optimism for the day.
So, James, who would you recommend Brainwash to and why?
Well, I think Brainwash is a fantastic podcast for just learning about how society works. And it's a good historical podcast because it obviously takes you back and educates you on things that were happening once upon a time and looks at how that has then impacted things moving forward. So it's got that historical lens, it's educational, and I'd recommend it to anyone who just wants to be a little bit more informed about the way in which the world we live in has been shaped in some way, shape and form by the past.
Nice.
How about you, Ols? Who would you recommend this podcast to?
I think anybody who has an interest in psychology, in, again, history and how psychiatric units have changed, or maybe not so much, over the past few decades. And anybody who has an interest in CIA dealings and how they have conducted themselves to carry out certain missions. And just to give you a heads up, James, there's going to be another CIA podcast coming your way shortly.
Well, I do like COVID operations. I'm wondering if there's any podcasts out there about what's the UK version of
MI5,
MI6, that kind of stuff, like James Bondy. I'm wondering if there's any of those kind of podcasts, because anything to do with spies, I'm all about that stuff. I love.
Have you listened to True Spies yet?
Have you asked me to? Was it one of?
It was one of my recommendations.
Or was it one of Ollie's Corners?
Yeah.
Okay. No. Well, then no, I haven't. But
oh, God. I can't even get my co-host to listen to my Ollie's Corner recommendations.
I'm building. So they're all there for me to, there's a library now of Ollie's recommendations that I can go back to once I've integrated podcasts into my life effectively and am looking for more content. I've got a library there, Ols, like all of our listeners do.
Nicely done, James.
We want to say a massive thank you to Michelle Shepherd, Chris Oak, and the whole team at CBC who brought Brainwash together. You guys did a fantastic job with this podcast. And a massive thank you for granting us exclusive access to original content in the making of our podcast. Now, Ollie, I am interested. You just talking about the fact that you listen to more than one podcast a week. So what else is happening in Ollie's Corner?
Have you ever heard of ASMR, James?
ASMR. I do like a good acronym, but ASMR. The Australian... have you ever played a game called Boulder Dash?
No.
One of the rounds is getting an acronym and having to make up what you think it stands for. So I'm just going to have a guess here that it's the Australian Service of Military Regalia.
On earth is that?
I have no idea. What does ASMR stand for?
It stands for Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response.
Meridian Response. Why does that ring a bell?
So we had a recommendation this week from Angie.
Oh, cool.
And she recommended a podcast called Sleep and Relax, ASMR. And this is a podcast that I had never heard of before, or this technique to help people get to sleep.
Ooh.
And it is different episodes of sounds done on a mic. So, for example, one sound might be me scratching the mic like this. Or me doing this on a glass. And those sounds are considered to be almost hypnotic in trying to get you to sleep. So I downloaded a heap of these episodes. I had people scribbling on paper. I had people brushing hair. And James, I was out like a light.
It actually sounds like a nightmare. Like
James,
brushing hair.
Check it out. One of them is a Parisian cafe. Another one is a street in Rio. And it's background noise, is considered really soothing.
So it's just an upgrade from rain on roof.
White and, noise. Yes.
And beach lapping waves. Yeah, okay, yeah. Sure. Yes. Okay, cool. Well, what I'm loving about this new technology that you're seeing in that space is that they're actually quantifying it by saying, oh, we know that these sounds are soothing to people based on X, Y, and Z. That's really cool. Okay, that's awesome. So for our listeners who are looking for an extra podcast, or some of our listeners who might be struggling to get to sleep at night, check out ASMR.
And the one I downloaded was called Sleep and Relax, and it's really good.
Awesome. Cool. Now, Ollie, what about me? What have you got for me next week?
Well, next week, James.
What about me?
You are in quarantine, so I thought I would totally exploit that and give you a mahoosive listen because you've got all the time in the world.
Chunky. Yep, hit me.
So I am recommending a podcast called The Deep by Zoe Marshall. And there are, I think, between season one and season two, there's about 21, 22 episodes for you to dive into there.
Cool.
And they're all about an hour each.
Yeah.
And each episode is Zoe interviewing somebody who has suffered either some kind of trauma or has an unusual job or has experienced something in life which is quite unusual. So one of my favorite episodes is with somebody who overcame cancer without having any chemotherapy, based on what you just said. I think you should definitely check out that episode.
Cool.
She does interviews with functioning heroin addicts. She does interviews with somebody who is referred to as the doll banger. I'll leave that up to your imagination as to what's going on in that episode. She talks to feminists, porn stars, people who clean up crime scenes after somebody's been murdered, ICE addicts, people who've been trolled on the internet, extremists, mistresses, psychics, everything. There is such a wide range of different people, different experiences, and every single episode takes you on a roller coaster journey. And Zoe does a fabulous job of detailing all these different people's lives and what they've experienced and what we can learn from them. And I love it.
Oh,
I knocked it over in a day, I think.
Yeah, of course you did. All 22 hours of it.
I didn't get much sleep that night.
Well, I love these kind of podcasts because you can listen to them in an hour, have that whole episode done. You know what I mean? Like, I do like that in terms of
like
efficiency. Yeah, very similar to Power Corrupts. Cool. All right, challenge accepted. So this week, if you're on the journey with me, we're listening to The Deep. As many episodes as you can, I'll knock out all 22, and then we'll come back here and we'll talk about...
You are in quarantine, James, to be fair.
Yeah, I am. I've got time. But we'll come back here next week and we'll talk about some of our favourite... I don't think we'll talk about all of the episodes, but we'll talk about some of our favourite episodes, shall we?
I can't wait to see which ones are your favourites.
Ooh, yeah, nice. Cool. Well, I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to it. And is there an overarching theme, Ollie, with the whole podcast? Is it...
Well, Zoe opens every episode by saying that she suffered trauma in her 20s and she is now interested in other people's traumatic stories.
Mm.
So I suppose the overarching theme is trauma. However, a lot of the people that she speaks to are people who've chosen a way of life.
Yeah.
The one that springs to mind for me is the conscious sex worker. And they might just be people who've chosen unusual paths in life and they're happy to talk openly about their experiences.
Whether it's traumatic for them or not is another story, right?
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I'm excited. So The Deep, people, that's what we're listening to this week.
So James, what words of wisdom have you got for us today?
Well, thinking about today's podcast and looking at the actions of other people that happened in the past, I really wanted to remind our listeners that we should all live our lives in a way that if in 20 years' time someone was to do a podcast about us and how we lived our lives, that we'd be proud of.
I love that, James.
So deep.
And a life that when you're fired, people don't dance in the street.
Yeah, exactly, right? which has been something that happened very recently.
Mm-hmm. I want to say a huge thank you to all our listeners for tuning in to this episode of My Friend Has Never Listened to a Podcast Reviewing Brainwashed by CBC. We really appreciate you joining us. You're the reason why we come back week on week.
If you love the podcast, the best thing you could do is to give us a review. So on whatever podcast you're listening, on whatever podcast platform you're listening to us on, leave us a review, give us a comment, because it really does help other people find us.
You can get in touch with us on all of our socials. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We love hearing from you. And you can also drop us an email at myfriendhasnever@gmail.com.
As always, a massive thank you to MJ from Multidesign for our theme music.
All right, James, I'll talk to you on the other side.
I'll talk to you on the other side, buddy.